Bonjour and welcome to Le Bon, La Brute et le Rugby. It's time for France 2023. 7 weeks of great sport, great food and delicious wine, all in the company of the three musketeers, Monsieur James Haskell, Michel Tindall and Alexandre Le Payne. Have fun, but not as much fun as you did in New Zealand 2011, but fun nonetheless. Bon voyage!
Hello, Dream Team. Welcome along to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby, brought to you by our very good friends at Continental Tyres. It's been a brutal tournament.
Where are we, by the way?
So that's a very nice question, actually, Mike. We'll get straight into it. We're at the Novotel Paris-Bercy, all part of Accor Lives Liban. Oh, bollocks. Well, this is going to be quite a struggle.
the words
are moving. The words are wandering around the place.
Just keep saying drink more.
Right. Is there such a thing as a rehearsal or no?
No. Life is a rehearsal, Justin. We go for it. We're at the Novotel Paris-Bercy, part of All, which is Accor Live Limitless, and they've been working with the team's officials and the fans, including their own loyalty members, hosting them at hotels across the country throughout the Rugby World Cup. We've got that in nice and early. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm not entirely sure it does.
Yeah, it feels like Willy Wonka or an elevator.
It's the TARDIS. It's our TARDIS. It's TARDIS. Oh my God.
I'm actually feeling a little bit embarrassed for the Fiof charge. My manager, Denny Keir.
There's a beer coming in, by the way. We'll just get this brought in. It'll be fine.
Jesus Christ.
Sam, our assistant, come in.
It's 10:15 and Justin's ordered 2 pints and a packet of nuts.
Here comes Sam.
We just love giving back to the game.
We got some pretzels as well.
Oh,
you dropped one in there. Look.
Oh no.
It's a pretzel and a beer. Good. Well, this has been a very tidy start to the show. Do you want anything else? Do you want a beer?
No, I'm all right.
Tins, do you want a beer?
That is my beer.
That is your beer. Right, good. We're off and running, that's for sure.
Cheers, mate.
Do you want to do a quick reflection on the weekend that was on and off the pitch?
Look, I think Friday was tough for Argentina. I don't think they really emotionally got up for it. I was watching them in the anthem because after what happened when England played them and people were leaving after 25 minutes, and you say, why are you leaving? They said they're not emotionally there. I think they got emotionally overcharged again. It would have been great if they had scored in that first 15 minutes. They had all the ball, but unfortunately then the All Blacks do what the All Blacks do, and they just controlled the game. I don't think they expended that much emotionally. They didn't expend that much physically and still walked away 40-point winners. Saturday, I was devastated. I think it's so hard to say you're the better team for 77 minutes. And I did see something quite funny the other day. It was like French women are now searching out English rugby players because they can be on top for 77 minutes and then still come second.
That's the content they come for.
Eat it.
On the Petty Pod and we've talked a bit about our lockdown, our big lunch yesterday.
Tins has made.
But you tune in.
You got a little glimpse behind the scenes.
Yeah, we did. Yes, I saw why Tins is non-stop. Why these two almost died in Japan on a 27-day continuous bender. Do you think anyone got behind the boys?
I actually think the French generally did get behind the boys. I mean, Ben O'Keefe got absolutely slated throughout the game.
You thought that was rough.
Yeah. No, look, I think like rugby always finds a way to go past attacking the officials. And look, at the end of the day, we all play. You roll the dice, you get good calls, you get bad calls, but we don't behave in that manner towards officials. I see it in football. It's like, how the hell, honestly, do they get away with getting in the face and abusing the referee?
Yeah.
Rugby's always had that, mantra of looking after the official. I thought booing him when he's doing his warm-ups and whistling at him was just bullshit. Honestly, that's just not fair, and it's not our game.
I think it comes from the fact that the French have never been in a situation where they can actually be that passionate about a referee. You know what I mean? I feel he made some bad calls.
But I think Dupont has a lot to answer for because he came out and he. I thought Fabien Gaultier, who I played against, obviously as a nine, he handled it really well. But Dupont came out and he just said that it wasn't fair, and they were. Yeah. Basically blame the referee. So he's the one who's created this momentum.
Yeah.
And like World Rugby should World Rugby should think about when players make comments like that, that they have to answer for them.
Justin Marshall, the snitch. Snitches get snitches.
Fucking hell.
He's a shit nine as well, by the way. He can't even play half of what I played, you know.
I'm not sure World Rugby are taking a lot of time to listen to this. We'll send a message. Tell us about your boys. Tell us about the reaction back home, because we're talking actually about, and we've spoken a lot about this England team that's been on a journey of being absolutely annihilated in the press and online, but actually the All Blacks have had a lot of that as well, haven't they, in the last 12 months or so?
Yeah, they have.
Ian Foster, Sam Kane.
Yeah, but they created that by their own, I guess, rollercoaster ride that they've had. And obviously Foster, just over a year ago, had this review where, you know, there was a change supposedly going to happen. The only thing that's, you know, the only thing, this is ironic, the only thing that saved him were the players. So after the test match at Ellis Park, one that they won emphatically, there was basically a move to have him outed as All Black coach. They did a press conference. I remember being there because I was hungover like I am now. And
between hangovers, that's basically your journey, isn't it?
I went and sat and watched it. I wasn't involved in the press conference, but we were covering it with Sky. And he was supposed to be there by himself with the captain. Five or six All Black senior members turned up and stood around and basically said, "This is our coach. We support him. We're only going to play if he's our coach." Literally, he was gone otherwise. So
he was actually gone. Really?
Yeah. But they came out and said, "This is our coach, and this is who we play for." And he's been criticised heavily for selections. I've been one that's been critical. Like, he's playing a winger at centre, which is Reko Ioane. Mm. He's playing a fullback on the wing, which is Will Jordan. He cannot fathom having Beauden Barrett on the bench, so he plays him at fullback, yet he's a first five. Lots of areas where Adi Savia is an open side flank. We've never replaced Kieran Reid as a number eight. But he's stuck with his mantra of, "I need these players all on the field, regardless what jersey, the number they got on their jersey."
Very agent.
And it's actually been now justified. And I'm actually sitting here eating humble pie because those guys are all playing really well. Geordie Barrett, he switched to 12. You know, so I guess in hindsight, like he's stuck by his guns. He's come under pressure, but he's...
It is interesting as well because as sort of outsiders, you know, the mystique of the All Blacks always speaks for itself. And that kind of we were looking at them from the outside and we've always said, don't go against them, whatever you do. Mm. I know how, having lived there and played there, what a proud nation they are. But obviously lose five games or whatever it was, everybody lost their mind. And the very fact that they actually nominated the coach, the succession already, you know,
Scott Robinson,
to have him coming in while you haven't even finished the job.
I know.
One eye over the wall.
Yeah, what a lot of pressure that is. I just wonder how much it, like you said, it came down to the players' pride, because it seemed like after they lost those games, I follow a lot on social media, and when they did start to pick things up and had some consistent victories, you could see how much they were hurt by the criticism and how much they were being criticised, because this All Black team doesn't really know how to lose. You know, the most winningest side of all time.
But let's throw it out there, like, put your, all of you in the same perspective. Like, think about, and this is what really worried me. So when you announce it that early, you know you're terminal. Like, that's it.
Yes.
So what have you got to gain? So I know that I think only one of the management is surviving under Scott Robertson's regime. So you've got 7 or 8 assistant coaches, medical staff, coaches that are now basically at the end of the World Cup, they're not employed. So what motivates you? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't give a shit because I've not got a job after this. So they're all actively searching for new roles. You know, usually reviews happen after a World Cup.
Yeah.
But they've done it so early. It's like, well, in my mind, I was thinking, well, what's motivating you? You know, like when you're actively out there looking for a new job. So look, the fact that they've managed to mentally be able to look past that and go, well, we're still here, we're still all about the jersey, and we still want the All Blacks to win, is incredible.
How amazing it would be that he could, they could win the World Cup,
and he's out of a job.
He's gone.
And how'd you backtrack? And obviously, like you said, maybe the recipe and sticking with what he wanted to do.
Yep.
It takes time. I mean, I saw Andy Farrell yesterday at our lunch to end all lunches, and I said to him, you know, congratulations on what he's done. He's done some amazing stuff. But when his first tenure, it was okay, wasn't it? There's a few games that didn't go that well, and you know, and then obviously he's built a legacy.
He had one. I think his job was up. up for grabs.
Yeah.
And then they beat England in the final game of the Six Nations. Yeah. And then they settled and they kicked
off. Because
on
they were
there.
Talking about, you know, there was a lot of like sea change. And then, yeah. it, but you have to have faith. Sometimes the writing's on the wall and things aren't right. But the very fact you've got players standing up, I've never heard that story before. That's mad.
I want to move on to the final because it is, I mean, it is between the two heavyweights. It is the big one. But just, I suppose, some quick reflections on the weekend. So I want to pick a Continental Tires showstopper moment of the weekend. If you're looking at any one particular moment of the weekend, go
Can
on.
Can I go first?
You fire away.
Okay, Andre Pollard.
The penalty.
Oh my God. Like, mate, that man has ice in his veins. Yeah. Like, literally. To be able to do it 2 weeks on the bounce. Yeah. 50, you're not talking, like, there's 55. So much. Think about goal kicking, people. Like, there's so much deviation and things that can go wrong close to the post, yeah. Let alone 50 meters out where wind or whatever comes in.
Raining.
That thing, honestly, if you rewatch it, went right down the middle.
Yeah.
The ball was going over the 22, and he had already picked up his tee and was walking back. He knew he had it. So, you know, the 22 meter line, it hasn't gone through the post. He knew he'd hit it that well.
Yeah.
Like,
take a drive down
the
middle.
Oh, my God. You pick the tee up and you're like, yeah, I got that. I got that.
Owen Farrell's 53-meter with the most casual drop goal. But the best, we saw him yesterday.
But I think that's speculative.
Yeah.
Like, he knew they were on advantage and he just, and his nonchalant sort of look after it was like, what do you expect?
Yeah, that's what, I saw him yesterday and I said to him, fucking hell, with that hell of a drop goal. He's like, mate, what do you fucking expect? And I went, what do you mean? He goes, well, and I said, well, all those extra kicking sessions with you, Fordy and Johnny Wilkinson, while Henry Slade's not invited in there, and Marcus Smith's looking over the fence, like, mate, what do you fucking expect, mate? Fucking international 10. I was like, fine. Okay.
Carry on. What about you?
No,
Jordan's hat trick? Ox's scrum?
Will Jordan is, I feel, the best player in the world. And I didn't even know that technically he's a fullback.
He is.
Because I've only seen him play on the wing. He's the best. I think he's the best player in the world.
He looks a bit like a naughty schoolboy as well, doesn't he? He looks so young and youthful, yet he just breaks tackles for fun, wheels.
Leg power, everything else.
He's one of those guys that you, as a player, you know, you come up against him. Someone like, I don't know, when I was playing against England, Jason Robinson, I was going to say Mike Tindall, but anyway.
Let's be honest.
And you're like, this guy just has this footwork close to you when you're a defender that beats you when you're not even expecting it. Like, Mark Talia's like that, but equally, Will Jordan. Christian Cullen's probably a guy.
Yes, exactly.
Like, Cully, literally, his strength was the fact that he, when if you're a rugby player, yeah, and you're attacking someone, say I'm attacking you, Alex, when I'm coming to you, if you use footwork, you're going to lose momentum. You have to, because you're going lateral to put a sidestep or whatever. And then you give your vulnerability away. So that as a defender, the player can move and then tackle you. Really amazing rugby players don't lose momentum.
Yeah.
And that's what Christian Cullen
glide, didn't he?
Yeah.
He just glide.
Right, but he wasn't losing any speed. So if you're not on it, he'll beat you like that. And, you know, I think Will Jordan is exactly the same. Because, like, he's not, like, if he took his shirt off as much as Hask,
the world would be worse place.
It's impossible.
No one does that.
But he's not super ripped. He's not super powerful. He's not.
So nothing like me then?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
He's not really, really tall. He's unusually strong and incredibly deceptive. And that's what makes him so good.
Like, literally, farmer strength.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And he can't, like, the amount of tackles he breaks just by leg drive and just completely, repeatedly going. It's the funny thing is, if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
But when rugby players watch someone and go, wow, that guy's good, that means he's really good.
It's about Mark Talia as well. Like,
what did he do?
He broke so many.
I know what you know.
On his night out.
You've never broke a curfew.
We actually said this on the, I think we did the mini pod yesterday, whatever it was. First of all, the amount of tackles he broke was incredible. Like, you looked at the stat, it beat more people that were on than there are on the field. But I wondered how brave a coach you have to be to take one of the most destructive defender beating players out because he did something. I'm like, fair play, because there might have been a chance they didn't come back.
It'd be bad for us because we'd never play.
We would never play.
This is a protocol thing, isn't it? Like, I'll tell you another guy that was like that when everyone was talking about it was, and this is before social media, which is a bonus, was Jerry Collins.
Yes. You said that yesterday. Yeah.
I did say that yesterday. Like, literally, the night before a test match, I remember here, and it was in Paris, and we were doing a thing, and like a promotional thing, and it was at a casino, and I happened to wander my way outside of it, and Jerry wasn't involved, and I just thought I'd have a look around the casino. I went down to the back end of the casino, and there he was drinking rum and coke, and he's on the machines. And this was the night before the test match, you know. But literally, wow. He'd come out the next day and he'd be man of the match.
Yeah.
But that was him. It was in his DNA. He could do that. Like, you think of Talia, he was obviously outside of the boundaries. But the problem now is that if someone takes your photo, and says, hey, here's this guy, he's supposed to be playing test match tomorrow.
I know all about
If you think of,
you're doing the photos yourself.
If you think of all the great sportsmen that in the past, whether it be Tony Adams, Gary Connolly,
George Best,
Gary Connolly got man of the series, man of the match, and he didn't get in until 6 a.m. one day, and he played at 2 o'clock the next day, and they had to wake him up with coffee. And he got man of the match.
They don't make him like that anymore.
You just don't know what where it's going to go.
We don't do that on the podcast.
No, high performance only on the podcast.
Cheers.
Okay, I'm going to wrap this one up. The other thing I wanted to mention, I'm going to wrap this one up now. And actually,
who are we putting in the hat?
So hang on, there's one last one as well, which is Geordie Barrett's try. Started with a great break from Rico Ioane inside the 22. 10 phases later, every single All Black player had touched the ball. Geordie being the last as he scored. Is that is our continental tires like showstopper at the moment. That is, and in a World Cup semi-final as well.
Yeah, I like that.
Well done, Geordie Barrett. The other thing we need to is to pick a performer of the week, and this is our Tommy's performer of the week, brought to you by Tommy Hilfiger. We'd like you to pick a player from our Tommy Hilfiger team of the week. Here's who made the side. So, Ox, Cody Taylor, Dan Cole, Maro, George Martin, Courtney Laws, Tom Curry, Ardie Surveyor, Aaron Smith, Andre Pollard, Mateo Carreras, Geordie Barrett, Rico Ioane, Will Jordan, Freddie Stewart.
Isn't it amazing that you've only named 3 South Africans in that team?
Yeah.
Have we left anyone out?
No. But I'm just saying.
Well, there you go.
Amazing, is it?
Okay, so that is your lot. I think, is there anyone in there who really seriously stood out? You mentioned Pollard already.
Do you know what? What I want to just interfere here is Tom Curry. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the chat was around him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Mate, he is good immense.
Yeah.
What a player.
Yeah.
Like, because I haven't seen enough of him to know what's in his DNA. Holy shit.
He's so young as well. He's a bit of a mongrel as well.
And
he does not,
like, you. If you run hard, like if you're running 100% at a South African forward, you're probably going to get hurt.
Yeah.
He did not yield at all.
Yeah.
Man, he can play.
They called him the
who
and Sam.
Who does he play for? Like in the
Sale.
Shit, mate.
They called him that. Eddie Jones called him and Sam Underhill the Kamikaze Kids because they just literally were flying around like lunatics, crashing into people.
He's awesome.
Last week, like he almost dusted some Fijians, and I was like, you don't dust a Fijian.
I know. No.
Almost evaporized himself.
But also tell you what the state of he looks like in about 15 years' time. His face is going to have an ear here, an eye down here. He weren't the best looking boys to start with, but he's going to be mangled by the end of it because he just literally has a complete disregard.
He's going to look like pre-hair job.
He will do, when I've got my ponytail.
When he made his way off the field and he was like hobbling basically, bandaged up, and to put in that work rate, I thought, shit me, that's rugby. And that is a soldier.
I was like, why are you taking him off? And then he was like that. He's like walking in circles. Yeah. I was like, okay, you can take him off.
Tom Curry, nod for Ingham. Ox off the bench?
Yeah, well, Ox and Chia. Like, honestly, I was talking to the South African boys about it because I've been working with them.
Smitty's all over him. He's like the best player that...
I know, but I said to them, why don't you start him?
Yeah.
Like, why do you bring him on when things are desperate? And he all he wants to do, what did they say? They said in the commentary that he basically said something about what he does in his DNA is he doesn't eat salad, he eats meat.
Yeah. Salads don't make scrubs.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's an amazing mantra.
Like, that's awesome. But like, why chase the game when you can actually dictate?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they reckon that they can't, like, if Kit's off, like, it's like their mentality is when he comes on, he destroys. But my mindset's going, well, why bring him on when you're desperate?
Because I think they also talk about, and this is a really interesting thing, is when do you get your first scrum in a rugby game? It's not until 25, 26, I think the latest has been 38 minutes for your first scrum. So if you've got an epic scrummager, why bring him on?
Yeah.
Why play him at the start?
That's because good point.
You don't get a scrum till 25, 26 minutes. So if you bring them on the other way around, that he can, because people get tired, people knock on balls. And I was like, I've never even thought about it that way. But it's true. Because everyone's so much fresher, everything else. You don't drop the ball.
So we're going to give it to the Ox. There was a brilliant thing online as well, which said, it's all about the fine margins. Rugby is a game of inches. Someone gets a bouquet for
you
that.
Missing that all last night.
Yeah. But I'm not mine. It is the quality of the kind of content I come up with. Well done, Ox. Thank you to Tommy Hilfiger for supporting the rugby community, our chosen family. Tommy's new full campaign is about celebrating families, and they're giving away the ultimate family trip to a handful of lucky winners to participate.
You had your jacket on last night.
I did indeed. I'm very, very comfortable in my my warm Tommy Hilfiger coat. To participate, join Tommy Together membership at tommy.com and shop to win. To the final. Amazing coming into this tournament that we had Ireland number one. We had a French side that had a home World Cup. We had an England side all over the place. And yet we end up with the two teams who have made a habit of winning this tournament. Six of the nine have been won. We've got a seventh champion from either New Zealand or South Africa. What does it mean to you, A, to see your side there, but also to up against the old friends?
It's really hard for me to be on the show and say, you know, honestly, what I want to say, which is I'd prefer it if we played England.
Right.
to be honest.
I've heard they've got Susan.
There's watches for everyone. Look out. Look, honestly, South Africa and our arch enemy, they know us well. Like, I think the fact of the matter is, if we were to play England, we've probably only played each other in the last half a dozen years, maybe twice.
Yeah.
World Cup semi-final before that, because the way that the deals are done. So you've got that, I guess, unknown factor. With South Africa, they are what they are. They know us well. Like, their DNA is very much regimented towards the All Blacks are our arch rival. We know how to take them on. Twickenham was non-ideal. Really worried me the way they dismantled us. No, both teams have moved on since then.
I think what the All Blacks have done is you know, the usual suspect of it. They've done, you know, the greatest trick the devil ever did was convince the people that he never existed, because they gave him two games where they just wrote them off. And then suddenly, under the radar, everyone talked about France beating Italy by 60. I was like, but the All Blacks did it by 96 the week before. And no one's talking about that. No one's making a big deal about it and the way they played. And, you know, 44 points in the semi-final. Look, everyone will say that Argentina didn't turn up, but it takes a specific type of beast to be able to still do that.
But can I ask you to, honestly, an honest question, and you as well, Alex, if you like, is when the All Blacks came to this Rugby World Cup, What was your thought process and how they're going to perform? Did you see them as favourites?
I didn't see them as favourites. I thought whoever wins the group, I said whoever wins that group A will win the World Cup.
Which was France, obviously.
Went wrong. But I never disbelieved in their ability after the Rugby Championship.
Okay. And I said, never ever bet against the All Blacks. Every time we did anything, they'd say, who'd you like to win? I said, I'd love to see Ireland or France or have that narrative. But I said, New Zealand.
They're always there because
the one thing that you've got to remember is just the athletic ability and the talent of that team. You know, their individual skill, the ability to, you know, when I played in New Zealand, the difference between the sides was if a New Zealand player gets a half break, that power and speed, that natural ability will always take them forward because of their athletic sort of prowess and the fact they're so good with the ball in hand. You know, sometimes when you watch New Zealand play, the ball just goes through everyone's hands. It's not rocket science. It's not like, you know, I remember there's that famous clip where I think Tana runs across, feeds off to somebody, someone turns around, and there's like eight or nine running lines. Remember that man?
I involved in that game, right? I threw the first pass, by the way.
You know that
which the best pass? In 1993.
Yeah, but you know that mad move.
And it was actually on Andrew Merton's back shoulder as well. So it kind of, I think it was a catalyst for the move going, well, it grabs a little bit more time. It was a shit pass, but anyway.
But what I mean is that's the belief that people have about New Zealand. But actually, when you watch it, it's just every single player on that field has the individual skill. You have footballing prowess within the forwards. You know, they will be their link men. And so we always knew they were going to be there. Okay. And I think we kept saying to everyone, you're doing them a disservice here. When have you ever known a New Zealand side not turn up?
Yeah. But the thing is with this New Zealand side is they don't have the 11 years of just granite core of their team through the middle of it. And they've roller coastered. You said it earlier.
Big time.
Yeah, they've roller coastered. So there is always a doubt, and everyone in that semi-final has beaten them in the last 2 years. So there's always question marks about, we know how good they could be, we know how good they are talented-wise, Haskell just spoke about it, but I always called it, there's a crack in the egg, because everyone's dented, everyone's put a little chink in that egg every time.
Including teams that have never... Never been able to do that. Ireland to win in New Zealand for the first time in history, yeah?
Yeah.
And then to win a test series for the first time. Argentina to beat us for the first time ever. You know, they are massive dents in our history. Yeah.
Do you know what it's like? You know the movie 300, where they said, if you can show a god, if you can make a god bleed, then you can be beaten. And that's what they were in New Zealand. Like, you've never seen them lose, you know, very rarely, never consistently seen them lost. And then suddenly, the mist, you're like, oh shit, they are human, but, and they can actually kill them.
But also, you sit on the other side, and do you know how powerful that is for a team?
Yeah.
Who go, well, actually, we beat them. We beat them last time, and we know we. Mm. And that was always the thing. You know, I always said, tell you about my past and the fact that I never lost to New Zealand for 4 years.
Which is mental, by the way.
Eight times, never lost them. In my first 50 caps.
Southern Hemisphere, not New Zealand.
No, I never lost to New Zealand, never lost to Australia, and lost once to South Africa.
Yeah.
But in my first.
Hang on, let's think about this. Okay. What period was it?
2003.
You beat us in New Zealand at Wellington, I remember that.
You played that?
Yeah, with 13 men, you dicks. That was really annoying.
Good to see you got over it.
Right. Yeah.
I can say,
World Cup, obviously. Yeah,
we beat you at all the autumn series.
Oh, you did too? Yeah. So I was playing in those.
Worry, yeah. I know exactly what
I was about to say. I never lost to England, but that's bullshit, obviously.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, mate. Especially from a Kiwi. We're the best in the world.
Then 2004, it all went started spiraling downwards.
That was a start.
I got yellow carded twice, actually.
Yeah. What most excites you about this All Black? Would you make any changes, first of all? Would you go again?
He won't. Because, like I said, he's been petulant.
Okay.
And his belief is that he needs to have a certain players on the field, regardless of the jersey that they're wearing. So, no, he won't. I think he'll bring Retallican.
Okay.
To start and put Whitelock back on the bench.
Right.
Do you think that, because they are so classy players, that they've figured out their role now?
Yeah.
Because I think they do. I don't even think of Jordy Barrett not being a 12 now. Because I don't watch it week in, week out of Super Rugby and everything else. Rico, you know, I always hate it when they move a winger into a centre.
I know.
I mean, George North, I hate it because I don't think they have the skill sets. But they learn, if you're good enough players, they learn. I think he has learned.
Oh, but I was going to ask you, like, honestly, if you're a fly half by nature and you have to play fullback, or if you're a winger that has to move to centre, like, it takes time, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does.
Do you think that they've probably finally figured that out? Like, because
Rico,
explain to the laymen, honestly, like, if you're a winger, with the greatest respect to wingers, they run fast, they step, they get themselves in space, they're good.
Yeah.
But if you move in one position, just one, and come in, you have to be a distributor, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Well, not if you're a 10, 10's a distributor.
But I threw it into touch more than most.
Yeah, it's kind of distributed.
No, I'm telling you people, the 13 is the hardest place in the world, not just from a attacking point of view, but defensively, it's such a change.
Yeah.
You are so, it's so important to how the whole team defends and how it, understanding how you, where your cog fits into the side of the team, and you know you've got to make so many decisions that actually lead to either tries or they don't lead to tries.
And when you look at historically great teams in the world, the centre combinations were like Nonu and Conrad's, like Ma'a, honestly, great player.
He's unbelievable.
But he literally unpredictable.
Conor Smith, he's the worst drinker in the world.
Yeah, he's massive buffalo.
Oh my gosh.
Terrible. But he was a wingman. So every good 12 needs a wingman.
Yeah.
That looks after him. And historically that Tana, exactly the same. When I play with Tana, unpredictable. Like he would fly up out of the line, but if he's got a good 12 inside him, you know, they would complement each other.
Yeah.
What most excites you about the World Cup final and where are your concerns?
Look, I think we've got, with the greatest respect, and I know this is hard for me to say given what's happened at the weekend, that we've got the dream final, to be honest. Yeah. Like, 95 was the last time these two teams played each other in a World Cup final. So, like I said, I would have preferred it to be England because I feel that they don't know the All Blacks as well. These guys know each other incredibly well. I think if you're going to get excited about a Rugby World Cup and you've got New Zealand and South Africa in a final, if you don't get excited about that, then you don't know the game. Yeah. So in the same breath, it worries me because, holy shit, they can play. And they have this in their DNA, ability to win games. They shouldn't have beat England. to a degree, they shouldn't have been France.
Yeah. They shouldn't have been.
Mate, they had half the amount of ball, half the amount of territory. They made twice as many tackles as France, but they still found a way to win. And they found that way to win in the semi-final as well.
But it still baffles me about that. France beat 35 defenders.
Yeah.
And they beat 10.
And then South Africa missed, what, they missed like 25 missed, tackles, 30
40,
tackles?
40. 40 tackles.
Scrambling specialists. So the thing is, they're like you're on the beach, you know, you're sitting there, you got your speedos on like he has, and or he has actually as well. And it's one of those little sort of mosquitoes that never goes away. It keeps coming back. You know, you think you swatted it, but it keeps coming back. That's what South Africa are like. Like they're tenacious, and they have this ability to not want to go away. Yeah. And they've got so much experience. Like so many of their players were there in 2019. It's like if you're looking for the perfect storm, this is not it for the All Blacks.
Last 3.5 minutes of that game sums up.
Did you think we're going to lose?
As soon as they scored that try, I did.
Yeah.
No, because, as soon as they gave the penalty away before they kicked to the corner, yeah, I thought we'd lose.
I tell you what, this is a clash of kind of out and out talent that's had ups and downs versus a ruthless sort of kind of mechanical team. Not that they can't play, but it's just obviously two clash of styles. There's a bit of infancy in one team versus a very settled, kind of considered team versus a coach that is completely drives the whole thing in South Africa. Everything works around him. Ian Foster, we talked about, has had those ups and downs, a bit of wobbles, but he has a bit more of the emotional backing of the players. I just think it's a really interesting way because it's two conflicting styles often, and one I think can win at all costs. I don't think at this point in time that New Zealand have the same level of ruthlessness to win at all costs, but I think they have the talent and ability.
I think the talent and ability to
actually take apart a team. You know,
is Razzie the best coach in the game right now?
Is he the best?
It's factoring everything in, the manipulation of the media.
But if you talk, like, I know you're asking a question at Tim, so I'll let him answer. But if you talk to obviously
tomorrow,
the South African boys, honestly, he's not that. Oh, I don't know. We're not going to edit this shit. So he's not that well liked.
No, he's not. So Andre Pollard got dropped. So he had a go at it.
But does it matter? Yeah. I mean, you must have both, all three of you, played in teams where you don't like the coach, but the job gets done.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, they love winning. Like anyone who knows any South African, it's a great analogy with the mosquito, because that's what they are. I'm set on a group of fucking 300 of the fuckers. And they're literally
taking it well.
All the time, it's just like, we're the best. It's like, so, you know, they believe, I think, and the players believe in that. And, you know, you meet the players and they're lovely, down-to-earth, humble people. And then you meet the fans and you're like, same. But it is what it is. You know, I got rinsed by them all last week. And for 77 minutes, I had all my pinned tweets to go back and go, and then 3.5 minutes, they turned it around.
The thing is with me, so when I went to Saracens, for my last couple of years, and we were
gravy training it.
Just gravy train, heavily stocked with South Africans. And we had Brendan Fenter, like honestly, that bloke. So he came up with this game plan and he was regimented in it, that we had to play only in our own half. So and basically when we were defending from 15 metres to our goal line, we kicked. And that was absolutely unacceptable to not do that. So obviously this is he's just been regimented in it, and he said he wouldn't buckle. So we had the situation, we're playing the preseason game, and I went to kick it as a 9 and I stepped across and there was a peanut forward obviously in my way, put his hands up and I was like, he's going to fucking charge this down. So instead of kicking it, I passed it to the winger who was free. He went down the thing, interchanged with me, bang, bang, we did a couple of little passes together, went into the 22, scored a try, 85 metre try. Literally pulled me out on the Monday and said, he brought me into the room and said, you cannot do that. I was like, we scored a try. 85 metre try. He goes, no, you can't do that. You're not educating our young players as to where we're going to play the game. I was like, for fuck's sake, like honestly. And he literally, we had an argument and my contract was on the line. And that's their mentality. Like if you try to go outside of the boundaries, you're outside of the way that their mentality wants to be.
Right. And he also told me I was the shittest player on the planet.
Brendan Fenter.
Yeah.
Did you run hard at him? Like, he's a good tackler, eh?
Yeah. he was like, you should never play for England. You're terrible.
Right. Was this over a drink or was this during a game?
No, this was after a game. This was before I played at Shea Saracens because he thought Brad Barrett was better than me.
So. Right. Wow.
He's obviously a good joke character.
South African
mindset. I don't know where the question originated, but anyway. And going back to it after talking about myself and something, like I scored a, by the way, I scored an 85
meter. The question was the New Zealand South Africa World Cup final. We're talking about Justin scoring a worldie at Saracens.
Is the fact that, you know, that South Africa, they are regimented in the way that their discipline is immaculate and they just believe in it. That's the bomb squad mentality, it's everything. They're so disciplined, and that the story is if they believe in a game plan, that's it. Wow. Yeah. That's it. And the players respond. And it went all the way back. Sorry, I know what it is now. When the coach was telling them that, which was Brendan Fenter, and there's all these South African players at Saracens, they're going, yes, coach. Yes, coach. Yes, coach.
Yeah.
Whereas myself and Glenn Jackson were going, challenge. Well, why don't we try this? Do you know what I mean? You've been in that position, eh? Yeah. But they were, yes, coach. They believe completely in what the coach is telling you. They won't challenge. Right. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we're going to come back to the final to round off the show. Very quickly, a quick note from our friends at NordVPN who are offering Good Bad Rugby listeners an exclusive deal. Suppose you're heading abroad and you want to be able to watch all of your favourite TV shows and sport back home or anywhere in the world, in fact. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the event. We actually had a reader who sent...
I guarantee that Marshy's been using a little VPN.
Perfect. Marshy, we'll get you an exclusive discount with NordVPN. We actually had a reader who sent in a note this week to say that they were watching the World Cup semi-final via NordVPN on a British Airways flight to South Africa. Yeah. What I went back and asked was whether the BA plane had continental tyres for the full GBR hat-trick.
For the full hack.
So well done, Nezzy. Thank you very much indeed for listening and getting on to NordVPN. What we did want to add in this week, actually, is NordVPN are working with UK charity Movember and are offering new and recurring customers within the UK a chance to donate to the charity.
Yeah, I mean, look, the goal of Movember is to encourage men to talk more openly about their health and to raise funds for research and support programs. Obviously, you know,
we had a lovely chat, didn't we?
We did. We've been doing a little campaign together from Movember. Look, obviously, you know, the biggest killer of men under 40 is suicide. There's obviously still a lot of issues out there. A lot of percentage of people feel, and men feel, that they're lonely and aren't able to talk. So anything that you can do to raise funds, to raise awareness, to support is super important. So why not enjoy your NordVPN, watching rugby, and also donating and doing things right?
Do you know, it's funny, we get a lot of heat. It's a hot World Cup, this. A lot of people with a lot to say, particularly through our social channels. But in person, you never get that abuse up front. What we do get a lot of, and we love, are people come up and saying, love the pod, thank you so much. I've actually been through some quite dark times, and you three perhaps have actually helped me a little bit.
So we got an email actually to our email address, info@goodbadrugby. We'd love to hear from you. It says, I won't read out his name in case he wants to be personal. It says, hi, following your question, if anyone's actually listening to your lock-in podcast, I'm a very happy subscriber. I really enjoy the show, including the lock-in, and it always puts a smile on my face during stressful weeks. Please keep it all going, as there was a period in my life where things were quite dark. Listening to the three of you every week played a part in me having the confidence to go out and rebuild myself. I'm now incredibly happy and going from strength to strength personally and professionally. So thank you for all the laughs. They really do brighten up the day. Kind regards, Christian.
But we're not going to tell his name.
Yeah.
Well, no one saw his surname. It's like that thing about the Partridge. Yeah, where you go to someone's house and it's like, we've blanked out our face and it's like on the door it says number 69. You can see the street address. Thanks, mate. Yeah.
Do you want to do the PS?
Yeah. PS, the Australian version of GBR is like being at the zoo watching primates sling their own crap at each other. Immensely unprofessional, fairly disgusting, but entertaining all the same.
As reader reviews go, that's pretty much on the money.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, if you would like to donate and you would like to get together with NordVPN, you will get a discount on your plan and an extra 4 months for free. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodbadrugby. The link is also in the episode description.
I was just thinking about the time that guy calls in and it's like, hi, we've got a call here from a listener. He's he might be gay and he doesn't know how to tell his family. That's Domingo Rodriguez from Littlehampton. And it's like the only name, the only fucking Greek guy.
I love the fact that when you tell a gag and Xander's laughing, it's a good gag.
As we wrap things up, Courtney. Courtney.
Yeah,
at the end of the tournament.
I'm so disappointed for him. I think everything he's done, he's set the benchmark for a lot of years on what it is to play for your country. And he does it in a way that He doesn't shout about himself. He just goes about. And every time I see him walk, it's like, bah, ba-da-da, ba-da-da. And Hask, you know, Hask's room with him way more than I have. I mean, he was very young when I played with Courtney, but he just goes about his biz in a ruthless manner. But if you spoke to him, you wouldn't know that. But then he would quite happily kill you on the field. He'd just sickle you left, right, and centre, and then he'll wake up, he'll pull you off the floor, and he'll do it again. And I think, you know, what he's been, I think he's been brilliant for Owen. I think he's been brilliant for Genji when Genji's been a leader. Just having that guy who's, how to describe, in the shadows of a nightclub. But, you know, if anything ever kicked off, he would be in there as quick as
you've never seen
get.
A 6'7" man be able to hide in plain sight.
Yeah.
You talk about the, you know, the greatest trick the devil pulled was making the world believe he didn't exist. The greatest trick Courtney pulls is, where the fuck did he go? And he looms out of nowhere. Very similar to Simon Short.
When you need him,
when he's there.
He's there. And look, I'm still gutted about the weekend, but I'm gutted for personal stories. We obviously had an amazing lunch with Jamie George and DC, obviously, you taught everything to when he was 18. And I'm gutted for those guys, and I'm gutted for Courtney, because I feel that they had one more step in them. But
I think as well, the thing about Courtney's story is we're going to hear a lot more of him. I think when he finishes playing, he's actually very deeply a deep thinker. You know, he sort of, you know, socio-political issues, all that kind of stuff. But what he's done with his career is incredible, because he was obviously always a outstanding player, but a little bit raw at times. And there was a period of time where he truly became world class, you know, before that Lions shot, and became.
You think that chase back?
Yeah.
All I can think about is that the commitment to the cause. A six chases back and makes that tackle in that corner.
I think he's I just think he's a truly world-class player, a leader of men, a great bloke, an absolute diehard team man. Did it all with the most relaxed air ever. And I think, you know, he is truly, truly an England legend. And I think that will never be taken away from him.
Good on you. You've put that very nice indeed. We've done a very special lock-in this week, which takes you through one of the greatest lunches I think mankind could ever go through. But we have also got a City Index tour
Welcome to the tour.
Yeah.
So it's always that way, isn't it?
Where GBR is bankrupt you go off to me, the back
you're
of it.
Like, well, where have you gone in Japan? You're like, where have you gone? And 48 hours later, I'm still out.
Well, we can see it with you.
Yeah. We delivered... like yesterday.
Do you remember
that
time in Japan when we got the sun was up? You know, we went for breakfast.
Well, the worst thing
8
was, the worst thing was, I went to go for breakfast and I walk across the road and then I bump into George Green and Keith, Kafer, and I'm like, right, let's go for lunch. Then I'm out for another day, then I bump into someone else. And you saw yesterday how
relentless. Relentless is the word.
Is the two of you leaning in on you?
Oh,
you actually
shit,
almost,
hang on.
Oh, he's gone again. He's gone again.
He's got no moisture
he's
in his body.
He's having a lunch yesterday.
Get some salts in you, bro. Drink something that isn't beer. Try some water. Have a bit of salt.
Sorry about that.
I thought... mate, yeah.
It happened yesterday. Shot on the backside.
That Cristiano Ronaldo shot. Well, they always someone going under the table.
Oh, so the Dal when it was at the Dal underneath. Yeah,
it's so sore though, isn't it?
The Dal, yeah.
It's right in the middle of the hamstring.
Yeah, because you've got no moisture in your body. That's why you're 99% alcohol, chief. Your blood's hand sanitizer.
Okay. Right.
Jesus, the lungs on the fuck me.
It's been a long World Cup.
Sorry about that.
You're right, you're under control. We're meant to do a tour tale brought to you by City Index, global provider of spread betting and CFT trading. What has been the best moment for you away from, has there been anything away from a long lunch that you can remember? What have you enjoyed about France, fans,
look,
people?
Absolutely. I think the French have been incredible hosts. And I think the stadiums, when you get Tonga versus Romania is full, is incredible. And yeah. We've got to think about the spectacle that we're trying to show the rest of the world for our game. And particularly when we've got to try and go to America to sell a World Cup, you know, in 8 years' time. So I think all of that's been incredible. Like, being in the south of France was amazing. Like, you know, September was the best month ever. Like, 28, 30 degrees, wandering around the beach clubs in Nice and Marseille and... Cannes and everything.
Tops on though.
Yeah, tops on. and I went to Ibiza as well on the cruise ship. It was all amazing. I went to Ryder Cup, which was wicked. Like that first day.
Unreal.
When Europe was so dominant and the crowds and everything. You don't experience golf like that.
You've had an amazing World Cup. The final thing I wanted to just mark the card of, because obviously they will be there on Friday for the England-Argentina game. We did something on Saturday pre-game with 2,000 England fans.
Yeah.
The good lot.
Yes, great.
I mean,
there are lots
of amazing people out here, but actually England supporters, when the time came,
yes,
delivered.
I think that there's always a split between the social media, the part-time fans, and the actual reality. And we did a whole thing for the England Rugby Travel, 1,800 to 2,000 fans, all lovely, all kind, all supporting, come what may. Yeah. Truly believed in this England side, created amazing atmospheres wherever they went, really raised the bar. I think from that Argentina game, which for me, from what I remember of it, was like a tinderbox outside, but in a good way. Yeah. We've talked about it before, it had all the kind of atmosphere and bits and pieces. I think those England fans played their part. I think England rugby fans are amazing.
So that was the Tortale Fan Appreciation section. Thank you to City Index, who offer spread betting and CFD trading across thousands of markets. We will finish with Saturday night.
Yes.
It's been a long road. Who lifts the Webb Ellis Cup?
Do you know what?
And I think, unequivocally, did I get that out?
Yeah, just about.
Thank you.
It is. I think the word is unequivocally.
You were, yeah.
We need to be honest. So don't play for the room,
yep,
because I don't give a shit what you say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just say who you think will win.
I will.
Okay.
New Zealand.
Why?
Because I think they're in a rich vein of form. I think they have the skills and ability to bring something different to the South African side. I think losing to them, I think it's going to come down to pride, and I think there's a lot at stake, and I think they can shock the world.
I am worried because South Africa should have lost the last two games, and they've won them. They know how to win. They know how to get things done, even when everything is against them. But for the good of the game, I want New Zealand to win. I think New Zealand, when they play at their best, are an incredible team. I think if you go through that team, they've got the best players in the world.
Sam Whitelock on for becoming a new first.
That's mad.
Triple.
World Cup winner. That is insane.
Which would be mad.
So what's your answer?
New Zealand
to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, but World Cups are never about, I don't know, an individual, are they? And I agree. It'd be incredible. But like SuperSport has paid me for this whole World Cup. So I've got this split allegiance. But obviously being an All Black and knowing what we need in New Zealand, I feel, after 2019.
Champ.
No, so here's the question. So what you've asked me is, who do you think's going to win?
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of who do you want to win?
Yes. So well,
if you say who do you want to win,
yeah,
I'll say the All Blacks.
Right.
Okay? I want
who
them to win.
Who do you think?
I'm worried.
Are you?
Yeah. And
do you
so
not think
I would say I think South Africa will... That they can win.
I think you've got bigger problems to worry about in the game. It's whether you make it to the weekend after just you two. That's what I'm really concerned about if I were you two.
I'm anxious about it. Like it's
worrying
me.
I understand why you're anxious, but I think everything that I said this to you guys before, that 35 loss at Twickenham, it felt to me that they were just probing to see what they could do. This New Zealand team were probing because obviously you put 40 on them in the rugby championship.
Yeah.
And I felt that they were just probing to see where they could go. And if you want me to go down stats, and I know that people tell me on social media, fuck your stats, who wins? But that game, on any other day, you could have won by 40.
Yeah.
Because they did double the meters, double the line breaks, double everything else. And I just feel that this New Zealand team are comfortable having a loss for a greater good. And I think that they've figured out how they will play from every area and they will beat them.
Problem is, zero resistance, nothing. Since Twickenham and then the opening game, they've had no resistance at all.
No, that's true.
Like every team have let down in terms of the ability to provide them with an equation they had to get out of. Italy were so shit. It was really annoying.
Shit-ily.
They were the one team that were going to offer some resistance. Argentina, no resistance.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden they're going to come over to South Africa who are going to resist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Are they battle hardened enough?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
I mean, but also, we all, like I said, I think New Zealand would, but it is so close. South Africa are so good. And they, as you said, ruthless. I just think whatever happens, I just hope it isn't like a 6-3 or a 9-3 or something.
We've had six knockout games so far and four of them have finished within a score.
Mm. Well, we said last night, all we want is a good game.
Yeah, that's it.
And I will add to that as well that I hope that it is the players that sort it out.
Agreed.
And it's not a red card or a refereeing decision. It has to be the players who define where it ends. It's going to be mega. It is the two most successful sides in Rugby World Cup history going head-to-head at the Stade de France on Saturday. That is it. I mean, that's what's left of the good, the bad and the rugby after 8 weeks on the road. Justin, thank you very much indeed for dialing in.
He's like the phoenix that's about to turn to dust.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah.
thanks for finally having me, by the way.
You're very welcome.
Camera's covered in phlegm in this little glass bubble.
Good Bad Rugby New Zealand is... We've got the man to build it around. Let's do it. Okay. Just a quick reminder as well. It's been a hell of a World Cup party. We've got an after party starting on the Tuesday after the final as our roadshow begins in Guildford.
Can our budget get him in?
We'll have to talk to Danny Kerr, who's on 90% commission.
Yeah, go through my manager.
Yeah, exactly. Cuffandtailor.com if you fancy coming to our World Cup after party. We've been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with our very good friends at Continental Tires. The Good, The Bad and The Rugby is a folding pocket production. This episode was produced by Tom Edwards. Enjoy the final. We'll see you in the aftermath.
You've been listening to The Good, Yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, Oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell, and Mike Tindall. Thanks for listening.
It's 10:15, and Justin's ordered 2 pints and a packet of nuts.
Here comes Sam.
We just love giving back to the game.